This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Finding more money for Michigan roads continues to be a hot topic. But Craig Thiel, research director with the Citizens Research Council of Michigan, says potholes will likely remain on major stretches of roads in the state, even as Governor Rick Snyder has signed legislation to boost funding for roads this year. Thiel says that's because of the formula for distributing road funding in Michigan and the obstacles to changing it. Craig Thiel, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Gordon.
He joins us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. If you can describe it simply, and it's probably not easy to describe it simply because it's not a simple process, how does road funding get distributed in Michigan?
Well, that's a great question, and let me kind of break it down into a couple component pieces. First of all of our transportation taxes, the gasoline taxes as well as the vehicle taxes, are collected by the state and go into the Michigan Transportation Fund, are dedicated for the sole purpose of road infrastructure, bridge building in the state of Michigan. So those dollars are kind of locked tight. We have a state law on the books, Public Act 51 of 1951, that governs how those resources are distributed to different road agencies in the state of Michigan to care for our roads and bridges. And the formulas are two-part in nature. The first part is an allocation across levels of government. And so the state gets a piece, then counties who manage the county road system get a piece, and then cities and villages who do the local roads get a piece. And those percentages are, or that allocation is based on fixed percentages in Public Act 51. Roughly 39% to the state, 39% to counties, 22% to cities and villages. Once that distribution occurs, then there's additional formula in the Public Act 51 that allocate the county portion among all the 83 counties and their road commissions. And then the city and village share of the road funding pie gets distributed across the 530 roughly cities and villages who manage roads in the state. And the formula are very complex based on a number of factors. And one of the reasons that we at the Citizens Research Council are concerned with the formula is we don't think it's the most efficient way of distributing the resources to make the motoring public kind of confident that the roads that are in the worst condition are going to get the most attention and the most funding.
Of course, something can be complex, and yet it can still get the job done. Why is it that this particular complex formula, in the opinion of you and others at the Citizens Research Council, is not doing what it should to fix our roads?
Right. So the formula assumes that the roads are more or less in good condition and that we're just in the business of maintaining the infrastructure. So they're based on the formula are based on criteria of basically distributing it all equally. And that's both for the county allocations as well as the cities and villages. The problem in the current environment is that the roads are in a crisis mode, the pothole crisis, as it's been termed here recently. And that's largely because we've been underfunding, and there's a wide consensus that we've been underfunding road infrastructure in this state for years, maybe even decades. And so the formula are designed to kind of distribute money for purposes of maintaining the current system that is in a good condition. And right now we have roads that are in far from good condition, and the degree to which they are in bad condition varies from community to community, and the formula doesn't recognize that.
So, for instance, we recently had some pretty big flooding here in southwest Michigan, Kalamazoo, and some other counties, and as well as other parts of the state. There was a declaration from the governor saying that these communities need more help. Of course, that left some bigger potholes on the roads due to freezing and thawing and those sort of things. Is what you're saying, part of what you're saying here is that because of Public Act 51, those areas don't move up the chart at all. They don't move up the list to get additional funding to fix their roads, which might be in worse shape than some other part of the state.
That's exactly the case. I want to be clear, when the money hits the individual communities, there's definitely a prioritization that's occurring. So the Kalamazoo Road Commission or the Ingham County Road Commission or the City of Lansing here where I'm at, they're going to prioritize the roads and likely give the highest attention, the most attention to those that are in the worst condition and in the highest need. It's the formula for distributing among the individual counties and the individual cities that is problematic. And I was looking at some data here, and this is comparing county conditions. And Macomb County's been one of the communities that's been pretty boisterous about the state's lack of funding for roads. And their system is about 40% in the poor category right now. And then I looked what's going on up north in Traverse City, and only about 25% of their roads are in poor condition. But with the funding formula that we have in place, it's guaranteed to give everybody more or less an equal share of the pie.
So Governor Snyder just signed into law this week some additional funding for roads in Michigan designed to have some money ready for the construction season, basically. It's moving money that would have been used next year to this year. But even with that, is what you're telling us here with Public Act 51, that money is not going to necessarily get to the areas of the state that need it the most?
I think that's right. The $175 million represents about an 8% increase over the roughly $2.3 billion that was going to go out on an ongoing resources that were going to go out to the state, the counties, and the cities for the roads this year. So 8% increase is not insignificant, but everyone's going to get an 8% increase regardless of the condition of their roads. And I think a more efficient and accountable formula would identify with those additional resources that are one-time in nature, so by definition, these are emergency funds, should go to those communities that have the greatest need. And using Public Act 51 doesn't guarantee the taxpayer, the motoring public, that, you know, we're going to prioritize the worst roads in the state with this limited funding.
One of the things you told us at the beginning of the conversation is that this is Public Act 51 of 1951. 1951's a while ago. Is the problem simply outdated, or was this idea from the start likely to lead to a distribution of funds which is not efficient?
A little bit of both, I think. Part of the problem with Public Act 51 and the formula, and there has been some changes over the years, but the basic formula has been in place since the early 80s. So these distributions among the state and the locals, and then to allocate the local pots of money have been more or less in place since the early 80s. So the last, you know, three decades, we've been operating under the same formula. I think data collection has changed, so we have a better sense of conditions of roads today that could be used in allocating the resources. Travel patterns and, how much traffic takes place on each road is data that we have that we didn't have 30, 40 years ago. And so the measures that are used today are the same ones that were used 30, 40 years ago to distribute the resources. And they're largely just proxy measures for, the use of the system and the need or the condition of the system. And I think over time we've got better data that should be incorporated in these formula, which would give, taxpayers and drivers more confidence that the roads that are in the greatest need of fixing would get fixed.
But you tell us that Public Act 51 is the third rail of Michigan's pothole crisis. And most people recognize that third rail is a term that often gets used for political difficulty, that if you touch this, it's the third rail and your political career is going to be over. Why is it so hard to get Public Act 51 changed?
I think the issue is what precedes the discussion about changing the formula. So usually the formula gets brought up when we're talking about increasing road funding and raising taxes, whether it's on gasoline or motor vehicles, is always a tough vote, and you know, once policymakers get to the point where they're going to, you know, vote for the tax increase, they don't want the fight that goes on with changing Act 51. And the reason why Act 51 is this third rail is when you distribute the money and you change the formula, you create winners and losers. And those who lose in this battle for the resources are going to be the loudest ones to speak up and talk to their state policymaker and say, you know, don't change the formula. We like it the way it is. Don't rock the boat. And we only have to look at the last two transportation tax increases for evidence of this. If we go back to 2015, there was not even a mention of changing Act 51. Then before that, in 1997, a modest gas tax increase, there was talk of changing Act 51 and the distribution formulas, and it nearly derailed the entire discussion about raising revenue in the first place. Politicians have very little incentive to change the formula, especially if they're a kind of a loser in the distribution changes. The governor, Governor Engler and Governor Snyder, have talked about making the formulas more rational and more reflective of the need in the system. But, you know, they're representing a statewide voice. They're representing maybe the taxpayer in Michigan. But the real decision-making on this occurs in the legislative chambers, and the winners and losers debate often kind of stymies any attempt to change the formula.
In 2015, there was also a ballot proposal which was designed to get more money to roads in the state. It turned out to be pretty complicated. If someone had tried to throw changing Public Act 51 in with this ballot issue, which voters rejected, would it have made things even more complex? I guess what I'm wondering is the road funding system here so complex that it's hard to explain how Public Act 51 fits into all of it?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It would have made it infinitely more complex. It was already a tough proposal to understand for the layperson. You know, but the time to look at changing the formula would be when there's additional resources, because then you can kind of mitigate the effect that the losers in the formula change would be feeling if there weren't additional resources. You can kind of transition the new formula in with some of these additional resources that are available. And the final compromise in 2015 on the road funding package had no mention of changing the formula. The debate really at the time was, do we get the additional resources for roads exclusively through a tax increase and new revenue, or do we peel off some of the existing state resources that we have and dedicate those for roads? And the compromise was a 50-50 split between tax increases and existing resources, but no mention of Act 51.
Could the argument be made that by having a rather inefficient system for distributing the money, it means that more money is ultimately needed to fix and maintain roads in Michigan?
Yeah, what it means is if you want to get the resources to the areas of the state that are in the highest need, you have to raise and provide resources to those that don't have the greatest need. And so it's an inefficient system. We have to allocate resources that we otherwise wouldn't have to allocate to certain roads and certain areas of the state in order to get the resources that are needed in those areas of the state that have the highest need.
So assuming that Public Act 51 is going to remain on the books and is going to remain in its current form, what is that going to mean going forward when additional money may be available? What does this mean for how it gets spent?
I think what we know for a fact is additional resources are going to be used and are going to be put into roads. They can't be diverted for any other purpose. So we have some confidence in that. I think the concern is, could the system be more efficient in allocating these finite resources? And we think it could be. It just means that fixing the potholes in Michigan are going to take longer, and some of the communities that aren't going to get the resources they need today are going to have to wait till tomorrow to get those resources.
Craig Theo is Research Director for the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
He joined us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. You can find links to the CRC's reports on road funding in Michigan at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Last week was National Sunshine Week, highlighting the efforts to open up government records and action to the public. Jane Briggs Bunting wrote recently that Michigan residents had nothing to cheer about during Sunshine Week. The former reporter, editor, and journalism teacher says that bills designed to expand Michigan's Freedom of Information Act are not seeing action in the state Senate. Jane Briggs Bunting is also a board member and founding president of the Michigan Coalition for Open Government. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, glad to have you. Glad to be here and glad to talk about the importance of government accountability and transparency.
So the landscape in Michigan is such that, as you point out in your column, the Center for Public Integrity surveyed all 50 states, and they gave Michigan an F in 2015 for accountability and transparency. Why does the state fare so poorly on those measures?
Well, there are a number of reasons that we not only flunked, there were several others who flunked, but we were ranked 50 out of 50 for lack of transparency. Some of the reasons are problems with our Freedom of Information Act, which statutorily exempts the governor and the lieutenant governor from being covered under the law. Michigan is the only state nationally where by statute the governor and lieutenant governor are excluded. Massachusetts also excludes the governor, but that's by a court decision. It's not by statute. The other problem we have is our legislation. Our legislators are exempt, according to an opinion by the Attorney General's office back in the 1980s and reaffirmed by Attorney General Schuette's office quite recently. So we both, two branches of our government, are not covered by FOIA at all. And in terms of the judiciary, in most states, I think it may be perhaps in all states, I'm not sure of this, but the judiciary exempts itself anyway on the theory of separation of powers. The legislature and the executive can't dictate what the judiciary has to do.
So the House has passed legislation which is designed to address some of this. What exactly would the House bill do if it were to become law?
The House bill expands the Freedom of Information Act to specifically include the legislature and the governor and the lieutenant governor. Most of the language mirrors the State Freedom of Information Act, with some exceptions. I mean, the exemptions count. There's a few additional issues there. You know, and it's a good first step in making Michigan more transparent and accountable at the state level, at the state elected official level. Now, other departments within the state are covered. Secretary of State's covered, Treasury's covered, et cetera. It's just the legislature and the governor and lieutenant governor that are not. I mean, it's called the Legislative Open Records Act. It's a series of bills. It's passed 98 zip in a bipartisan effort on the part of the House. This is the second time they've passed this type of legislation. It's not perfect, but it's certainly better than what exists now.
So it passes overwhelmingly in the House with bipartisan support. What's the problem in the Senate?
Well, it went to the Senate, and Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff assigned it to his own Government Operations Committee, and this year, this session, is burying it just like he did the previous years. He told a group of reporters at the Michigan Press Association conference a year ago that he wasn't going to pass, he wasn't going to pull it out because he didn't think it was necessary, and that only journalists are interested in freedom of information. But we can, I can tell you as a member of the Michigan Coalition for Open Government that that's not the case. Our citizens throughout the state are very interested in watchdogging their own government at all levels.
And might that be the thing that is needed to put more pressure on the legislatures? If it is seen as people like me who have an interest in seeing this bill passed, or the people I work with, perhaps the public's not as interested. But might the public be a little more focused on this when you start talking about everyday citizens who do want to watch what their government is doing, do want to be able to see records?
Sure. And that's the purpose of the Freedom of Information Act, was to allow ordinary people, citizens. This law was not written for journalists. This was written for the public to have access to records of, their governing bodies, the people they elect. They want to know what's going on, and they have a right to do that in most circumstances. I mean, if you're at a city council or you're going to the police department or the school board, you can get access to this information. If it's in the office of the governor, lieutenant governor, or the state legislature, you can't.
What are some of the other problems with the Freedom of Information Act as it stands right now for the bodies it does apply to, you know, a city council, a city commission, a school board?
Well, fees are the number one issue we hear about and with complaints. A lot of these public bodies charge what the citizens feel is our excessive fees. Now, in 2015, the law was modified to more specifically address the fee issue and to require public bodies to publish a fee schedule so people know going in what it's going to cost them. But, you know, one of the problems with the law is, you know, back when it was passed, the individual that you would get the records from would be the lowest paid person within, say, the police department. That law was modified in the late 90s to be the lowest paid person capable of retrieving the information. And all of a sudden, that wasn't the lowly desk clerk. It became the police chief. Or at a university, it wasn't a clerical person, a staff person. It became the general counsel. Same at school board. So it became much more pricey because more people had to put their thumbprint on it who were paid a higher wage.
And does that make it prohibitive at some point for some people and maybe even some news organizations to seek documents that the price can get kind of steep?
Oh, it can be very steep, and it's become a huge issue. I mean, a lot of news organizations, due to, you know, budget issues, layoffs, don't have the finances anymore to fight to get records and or to pay the fees that a public body is assessing for the records. And these public bodies know that fees can discourage anyone, citizens, reporters, you name it, if the fee is too high.
Is there also an issue with how quickly you're able to get this information, even if you can get a body to comply with the request and they agree, yes, it's something you can see? Is it necessarily the case that you're going to see it right away?
No, that's another flaw in our law, though it's 5 business days to respond with an extension, which is, you know, frequently almost automatic now, of 10 business days to get records. That's just for the denial or the okay that you can have the records, either full or in part. However, there's nothing in the statute which says when those records have to be delivered. There is some reference now in the revised law from 2015 that public bodies have to give you the best estimate, a good faith estimate, if you will, on when those records will be released, but they're not held to it. And so in some instances, it can take weeks and months to get records.
How much of an outlier is Michigan in the overall scheme of Freedom of Information Act, government transparency, maybe we could throw in open meetings compared to other states?
Well, Michigan, you know, based on the Center for Public Integrity research, you know, Michigan is a real outlier. Not having the governor and the lieutenant governor and the legislature be subject to the Freedom of Information Act really has hurt us in terms of transparency and accountability. There are other issues that hurt us as well. We have no ethics policy for our elected officials at the state level. We don't have any financial disclosure requirements of our legislatures. So you don't know if a bill is proposed, if somebody, you know, gave a donation to somebody's campaign, or if they have a business dealings with them on the side. You don't know, you know, the rationale behind some of the legislation that's proposed, because you don't know the financial information that legislators have. Now, if you're a member of Congress, you're required to disclose personal financial information. But if you're a member of Michigan's legislature, you're not. And many states requires this of their legislatures and their executives. Michigan has tried, there have been bills passed, I think, since 2003, trying to get this financial disclosure rule approved, and it's gone nowhere every time.
You end your column by saying that you hope for a change with the new Senate Majority Leader because the current one, Arlen Meekhoff, is term limited, and that a new governor, we don't know who that will be, of course, would sign this into law. I guess I'm wondering a little bit, is changing the players everything here, or does there have to be maybe an increased awareness for the public that you have to maybe keep reminding people what's at stake for them in this fight when, you know, there is these questions of what records are available, how much does it cost to get them, and how long might it take for you to get them in your hands?
Well, I think that, you know, people are unaware of it and haven't had to be a force to be reckoned with their public bodies. So, you know, there are certainly individuals out there throughout the state who have been very persistent about pursuing these records. A change in leadership will make a difference. All of the gubernatorial candidates at this point have committed to supporting legislation that would make the governor's office and the lieutenant governor subject to FOIA, as well as the legislature. And then the new legislature has to be introduced in the new session because these don't carry over. Hopefully the new individuals who are elected to the legislature in the coming term, the November elections, are going to continue to push for the Legislative Open Records Act, a version of it, if not the current one, something similar, and that would put up both of the legislature and the executive branches of government under FOIA for citizens to access. But it's important that citizens do this, that you have a right. And most of the time, I think people are somewhat surprised. In fact, they're usually surprised that when they go in to seek information, to seek a public record, that they can't get it so readily, that they have to file a Freedom of Information Act, that they have to wait, and they might have to pay a fee.
You mentioned that all the candidates for governor have pledged to open up the office to FOIA. Do you view this issue as headed in the right direction right now? Do you think that people running for office in November are either, one, going to genuinely think that it's the right thing to do, or two, will feel some political heat to increase transparency?
Well, it certainly is the right thing to do, but I hope that they live up to their commitment and feel some heat from the public that, yes, you know, this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And the people really need to know what's going on in their government.
Jane Briggs Bunting is a former reporter, editor, and journalism teacher. She's also a board member and founding president of the Michigan Coalition for Open Government. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You can find a link to her column on why Michigan's Freedom of Information Act should be expanded at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.